Life.
Dignity.
Security.
Freedom.
Freedom.
Respect.
Justice.
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 Equality.
Equality.
Remedy.
Protection.
Fairness.
Fair trial.
Fairness.
Right.
Well.
Peace.
Movement.
This is my mistake. Let me make it good. I raise the wall, and I will be the one to knock it down.
Asylum.
Identity.
Family.
Home.
Conscience.
Expression.
Expression. Expression.
Expression.
Participation.
Democracy.
Welfare.
Work.
Work.
Leisure.
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 Health.
Education.
Focus.
Culture.
Human rights.
Charter Dana.
Solidarity.
Fill in the mortar. I raise the wall, and I'm the only one. I will be the one to knock it down.
Good afternoon to all of our listeners on CJTR Community Radio at 91.3 FM and over the internet at cjtr.ca. We can also be heard on Sasktel Max at Channel 806 and Access Communications Digital Service at Channel 700. Wherever you are, welcome to Human Rights Radio, hosted weekly by Amnesty International volunteers, who are a worldwide movement of people dedicated to the promotion of human rights and the safety of all human beings. We're building a world in which every person enjoys the rights included in the Universal Declaration of Human Rights and other human rights standards. Our theme song is titled 30 Words, the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, written and performed by REM and a collection of musicians from around the world. I'm Jim Hutchings, with my special guests, Libby Jeffrey, who is president of Group 91 of Amnesty International here in Regina, and Sebastian Nemeth, who is a fairly new member of Amnesty and who is a journalist from France.
Thanks for having us, Jim.
Welcome. Welcome.
Thank you, Jim.
And the occasion of having this illustrious, well, I'm going to include myself in the illustrious group having this here, is we're going to talk about Right for Rights. And that is going to happen when, Libby?
Right for Rights is on International Human Rights Day, so that's December 10th. And we hold an event every year, actually. The Regina group puts one together. This year, there's also two events happening in Saskatoon and then also one other event happening in Moose Jaw. So it's a really exciting time of year for us. Our event is at the Artful Dodger here in Regina from 5 p.m. to 8 p.m. Last year at the same event, we wrote more than 200 letters, which is pretty incredible. And Amnesty puts together certain campaigns to focus on. And so everyone who's writing letters around the world are writing them on behalf of the same dozen cases. So it's a pretty large movement, and we do tend to see a fair bit of results in the time that follows, and it puts good pressure onto different world leaders.
I do get this question asked from time to time. Somebody will say, does it do any good? I mean, really? Writing letters, does that do any good?
I am a firm believer that it does. We get together in Regina twice a week, actually. There's a daytime letter writing group on Thursdays and also on Tuesdays. And Amnesty International actually does have some cases from past years where people have been released or their sentences have been diminished or maybe their conditions in the prison have been lifted. Some of the more severe cases, maybe they have gotten to communicate with a lawyer, maybe they have gotten to access their family again. So there are either pressures mounting to help their situation. It might not get them out of the situation completely, but make them have living standards in their situation of imprisonment oftentimes.
Yeah, what Libby says is right. Like, it's not only something symbolic, like you pick up a date and you do an action because that day seems right. Like, people have to imagine that it's thousands, hundreds of thousands of letters that will end up on the desks of people in power who can make different cases change. And it can only be a letter, but when you have a whole stack of it, hundreds of thousands received, like, it's a lot of pressure, because those people in power will see that it's amnesty, but it's also hundreds of and thousands of individuals that take the decision to write themselves and spend their time, their energy towards that aim. It might be funny, but my mom, for example, is a professional nagger, as you say in English. She's a nagger. So when she wants me to do something, she repeats it every day, every single day. She repeats it, and in the end, as I'm a weak man, and I love my mom, I give up. And like, this is some kind of a nagging for good, on a good purpose for human rights. Like, we're gonna nag those governments to have the people are in jail released and to, you know, respect human rights.
Yeah, and there actually is someone that I had the pleasure of meeting this past summer. Actually, Jim, you met him too, Angel Colon. And he's actually been released from a prison in Mexico. And Amnesty International started campaigning for him several months before his release. And our Secretary General went and met with him in prison and learned of his conditions and the conditions under which he was arrested. Mm-hmm. And they started campaigning. He was released last year in October, I believe it was, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Like, in general, letter writing campaigns do help in many ways. And there's also just two of the things that I love about it is that for me personally, I show up to a letter writing event and it makes me think outside myself. It makes me learn about news that is not necessarily in popular media. And it also on behalf of that person who I'm writing for, I would hope that if ever I were in that situation that someone would do that for me. But also, I've talked to people before. There's actually someone here in Regina who was imprisoned at one point many, many years ago. But he remembers when he was in prison, the guards trying to hide boxes of something. Mm-hmm. And then one of the guards, they tend to have some prisoners that are assistants. And one of the assistants had said that those are letters and the guards don't want the prisoners to see them because it would give them hope, right? And so, you know, there is that possibility. And the cool thing about the write-a-thon that's coming up is that there are some opportunities to write directly to people in these situations and just write letters of hope to those people, not just campaigning for them to world leaders. So it really is an exciting time of year for us.
And I think too, we were talking about Mexico. And from what I've been reading lately, it appears that there's a broader effect happening where police are being encouraged to stop their tendency to torture people to get confessions and information and stuff like that. Because we're not the only group that is bringing attention to this practice. There are other, but we just, I think we're the best.
No bias there, Jim.
But I think that the government is getting tired of being kind of recognized as having this massive problem with their police force tending to rely on really unsavory, cruel methods of interrogation.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes I think it just makes they look at it as making their job easier. Well, this guy's guilty, and we'll make him say that he's guilty. I don't know why. Why else would you do that? I don't know.
And there is an interesting expression that you use. Like you say, Jim, the government is getting tired of that. Like, this is the point of writing letters, because it goes on and on and on, and it's adding pressure on the governments. And another string that is pulled here in that operation is that it's going to be huge, it's going to be massive, and it's going to interest the media.
Yeah.
The journalists, like myself, like will be focused on that event. And that's the point. Like, there are going to be lots of articles written, stories written about that. And all this is also adding pressure on governments.
Absolutely. And in terms of Mexico, it's a strategy of Amnesty Canada to particularly focus on certain strategic countries where they can have more influence. Obviously, with trade deals, with things like that, Canada has some clout in its own region, in the Americas. So Mexico, there is actually one focused letter-writing campaign that will be at Right for Rights on behalf of, now, I'm not going to pronounce her name correctly, but Yesenia Arantha. And so she's someone who was tortured into signing a statement that she had never read. Mm-hmm. And that was put up as a confession that is now being used to keep her in prison, right?
Mm-hmm.
So a case like that, we are able to mobilize people here, and it coming from Canada could sometimes have more clout, just geographically and also politically, when we're communicating with certain countries. So,
yeah. When you think about it, you know, we have letter writing every week, as Libby mentioned. We have it in the daytime, and we have it in the evening on Tuesdays, and so that happens pretty much on a weekly basis. And now December 10th, this is going to be like a concerted effort. Like, we're getting a bunch of people together. Like, our letter writing things, we might have, you know, five or six people around a table and
chatting
and they're writing letters and stuff.
Yeah.
This event that we're having at the Artful Dodger is going to be closer to 50 people or more who are writing letters. And this is happening all over the world.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and correct me if I'm wrong, Libby, I think last year was over 1 million letters written by Amnesty. I think that's what I read on the website. So,
right.
Like, it's a flooding of letters and pressure there.
Yeah.
2014 was actually over 3.2 million messages. It might have, some portion would be letters, but then there's also the opportunity to live tweet. You can tweet certain leaders. Things have totally changed with social media, right?
That's the other
thing.
Yeah.
So over 3.2 million messages, and those messages were coming from 143 countries worldwide. So this is huge. This is the world's largest.
And if you're not used to social media, you can just plug in your fax machine.
Exactly.
And send a fax, like, use whatever, or the good old letter, like what we're going to do next Tuesday. Use your pen and piece of paper, get the good address, and send the letter.
Yeah.
That's exactly it. That's what's good. The researchers at the grassroots level.
Explain to us just exactly, like when we go to these letter writing events, we are basically using what are called urgent actions, and they're coming to us from Toronto.
Mm-hmm.
And so describe to us how that urgent action is laid out.
So Amnesty is a research-fueled organization. So there's over, I believe it's 80, there are 80 offices around the world, Amnesty offices. We have two here in Canada. And then there are researchers on the ground, oftentimes local researchers. We also have certain delegates that go from the offices to research on the ground, talking to everyone involved in these cases. So the urgent actions that we receive throughout the year, that is our fuel, right?
Mm-hmm.
And Amnesty also has some great reports online coming out of the work that it's doing. So a lot of the funding goes towards that research, and you will see it cited quite a bit in media when there is a popular story that comes up. They'll look to Amnesty for credible information. So from there, Amnesty looks at our global portfolio of cases, which includes prisoners of conscience, different human rights defenders, different torture survivors, maybe communities at risk as well. Like for the Open for Justice campaign with business and human rights to do with mining. So there might be whole communities that we're campaigning for. And then from there, the cases where global activism can have a huge impact, those are the ones that are chosen for the Right for Rights event. And then the grassroots leaders, so that's any of us. I mean, we're all volunteers here. They can just sign up to organize events in action. Some people will just hold an event in their living room and print off the actions and have all their friends and neighbors over, right? Or you can make a really public event like what we're doing. So that's kind of how it goes. We look at the bigger picture of what we have, try to be strategic in the ones that are chosen for our particular country. And then letters, tweets, emails, faxes, text messages, right. Petitions. Those things start arriving in government offices over the next couple of weeks at a time where it's really busy. And I find it's a really well orchestrated system that they have going for it.
Reminds me one time I wrote a letter, I think it was to Somalia, and I got it returned to me from Toronto because their post office system in Somalia just was not working. I think it was Somalia. I think it's likely that.
Yeah.
But, you know, they have fax machines.
Yeah, exactly.
And your urgent actions. Yeah. And sometimes it'll tell you, you know, postal service is not reliable. So here's a fax number or here's an email address or whatever. They've got different options. And it's all organized very concisely. You know, you get a good selection of facts, you know, and then they give you suggestions as to what to ask for. So when it comes down to actually writing the letter, you know, it's really something that everyone can do.
Exactly. You know? And learn at the same time. We have people in Saskatchewan that just subscribe themselves to the Urgent Action Network. And they just are dedicated members from their own place. It's not like they make a big social event of it. But they just make sure to find out about these things and write on behalf of the cases that really interest them. Yeah. So
on December 10th, if somebody has never... When I went to school, I was taught how to write a letter. And I'm sure there are people that after they got out of school, they never wrote a letter.
Yeah.
So if you're one of those people, and should you be afraid of coming to our December 10th Right for Rights event?
Not at all.
So will there be help for someone who's really unfamiliar with what it takes to write a letter?
Absolutely. So the nice thing about it is that you get these two-page briefings. So one of the pages kind of describes the situation and the research that has been done. And then the second page explains who you're writing to. So in the case of the Mexico case I had mentioned, you would be writing to the Attorney General of the state Sinaloa. So that's pertinent to this particular case. And then it guides you on some points that Amnesty wants to bring to the table regarding this case. So it's not like you're just freestyling and you're supposed to know the Universal Declaration of Human Rights inside and out. It's that they give you a briefing. You can have some extra information if you were to want to access that. And then there's some suggested points. And one thing I just wanted to mention is because sometimes people say, well, how do you know all these people are not criminals? You know, like how do you know that they don't deserve to be in prison and in this situation? But typically what Amnesty advocates for is, like, I'll take the phrasing that they use here, to the Attorney General, it's urge him to carry out a prompt, thorough, and impartial investigation into her torture and bring those responsible to justice. So oftentimes it's advocating for the human rights aspect of it. So, you know, access to a lawyer, right? A fair trial, and an impartial investigation into torture. You know, these things that aren't necessarily saying, you know, getting too black and white, unless if there is reason to say that. Oftentimes it is just advocating for due process, right?
Yeah, it's sort of like 101 writing letter. Like, I speak with my own experience. Like, I'm really new member since only a few months, and first time I went to the writing letter sessions. Like, I didn't know what to expect, what was going to happen. And yeah, you've got all more experienced members that guide you. And as Libby said, like, you've got all those briefings about different cases. You read them. It's short. It's very simply explained. And you can add human rights notions, law notions, but you don't have to improvise yourself as a lawyer, because you can't do that. And I would so you can use the material they're giving. You just, I mean, it's not a factory. Like, you don't have, you spend a couple of hours of your time writing a letter, but you don't have to write 100. Like, you just write what you can, what you want. It can be just one good letter. But you went through the case, you took your time reading instead of, you know, writing as fast as possible, 10 letters in a row. And I would say, like, you can also write with your heart. Like, you might make a mistake about quoting a law article or whatever, but, like, you read the case, you imagine what the person is feeling in prison or whatever is her situation, and project yourself in that case and read material, and you react as a human being who is, shocked by such a situation. So, yeah, it's not something very technical at all. It's not technical at all, actually. Yeah. Use Amnesty material, but also write with your heart. As
exactly.
I said. Write what you think about that. Yeah.
I totally agree, because sometimes people get caught up in as if they're representing Amnesty in writing the letter, but really, at the end of the day, you're using Amnesty's resources, because it is well-founded and well-researched and well-based. And you can totally say that in your letter. My name's Libby Jeffrey, and I'm from Regina, Saskatchewan, Canada. I'm writing because I heard through Amnesty International that, and then get into what you've heard and what you see as issues surrounding this. You can also use their points. You can, you know, at the end of the day, we're humans writing to humans on behalf of humans.
and one thing I'd like to emphasize is the reliability of the Amnesty research, and the unbiased aspect.
Exactly.
I'm thinking of the when they were reporting on situation in Gaza, the power structure in Gaza wasn't very happy with Amnesty's report, and the Israelis weren't very happy with Amnesty's report.
Mm-hmm.
Well, when both sides aren't happy, you know that there must be some truth there.
Yeah, it's true.
we're not leaning on one side or the other. We're just telling it like it is. There are some bad things happen on this side, and there are also some bad things happening on this side.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody is blameless, so let's make some improvements.
Yeah? Exactly. And every time there is a worldwide report that is published by Amnesty, like, all the international medias are covering it, which is a proof of our liability. Like, I've done it myself.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, every time that Amnesty is doing moves, like, there is like a tag, a credibility tag that is attached to it.
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly. And a major way that they're able to maintain that is the fact that Amnesty doesn't accept funding from any government, right? It's grassroots funded. It's the membership that helps finance Amnesty. It's fundraisers. It's all of those things.
To remain independent.
Exactly. So that they can remain impartial and neutral and look at it objectively, right? So
there will be an opportunity for people to donate at the at the Artful Dodger.
Yeah, donations, and we're going to have a 50-50, too.
And there's and one thing, like, in terms of letter writing internationally, if you do this, you discover what the cost of international postage is.
Yes.
And was it? I think it's $1. Is it $1.80 now? Or
international
more?
Postage is $2.50.
$2.50. Yeah. Oh, I'm behind the time here.
Oh yeah, Jim.
$2.50.
But you can write an email.
Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. Well, we got some email addresses.
The emails start to look a little, more cost effective. But
exactly.
Still, the idea of having a physical letter land on, say, a police commissioner's or a prison warden's desk, you know, where you're asking for more humane treatment and making sure that this prisoner gets proper medical attention, and you're putting it's going on his desk, and it's not alone. There's a bag full of mail on his desk,
Absolutely.
And that's one of the things. In the end, it's not so much that he's has got that much empathy with the prisoner. It's just that he wants to stop this avalanche of mail on his desk, and the only way to do it is to make something happen good for that that prisoner. So that's how things happen.
And one thing to mention too is that it's not only letters ending on the desk of a commissioner or a minister or whoever, it's also letters ending in the hands of somebody who's from the prisoner's family, for mm-hmm. example, people, the relatives. Mm-hmm. Like the first letter I wrote on behalf of Amnesty Saskatchewan was the wife, the spouse of a prisoner in Saudi Arabia.
Raif Badawi, maybe?
Exactly.
Yeah?
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah, that's the first letter I wrote. It was to the wife.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what that relates to what I said, write with your heart. That those kind of letters, like, I didn't have to write her like tons of law articles or mm-hmm. whatever. Like, it's just a like human letter from
exactly.
one human being to another human being, like telling about your personal experience, trying as if you were having conversation
yeah.
with that person. Like, you're a relative, you must be in pain, hang on, we do what we can. A lot of people are mobilized to help your husband to go out of prison, stuff like that, which are not at all technical, just come out from the heart.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah. And that's often the case. I mean, these people, especially those who are disappeared and that sort of thing, you know, there's people left behind that need support and that are doing huge campaigning to get that person released and sometimes risking their own lives in order mm-hmm. to get them released, right?
Yeah. And having one person in prison, it's not only that person that is in prison. It's it's touching. A lot of people are
exactly.
relatives, family, mm-hmm. friends, all those people are hardly touched,
yeah.
or not hardly,
powerfully
touched,
yeah. touched
mm-hmm. By that, by a case.
Exactly. Yeah. Absolutely.
I'm just about ready to, I think, actually we're at the bottom of the hour.
Oh yeah, eh?
Yeah.
Time
flies when you're having fun, of course. And so we're going to go to our break. And if I can get my computer to behave here, then we're going to get some music that Sebastian has chosen, and we'll just see how that works. But we'll have some music of some sort. If
anyway.
I can't get that up, then maybe I'll play. I got a nice Joni Mitchell CD here.
Oh, there we go.
Bulldog gave me last week, so maybe we'll play something off that. But we'll do the break here first, then we'll come back. And I'm talking with Libby Jeffrey and Sebastian Nemeth. And they're with Amnesty we're talking about, Right for Rights, which is going to happen on December the 10th at the Artful Dodger. So, we'll be right back and we'll tell you some more about Amnesty. We're back. My computers aren't actually cooperating.
We'll cooperate with you.
Okay, you're going to cooperate.
We'll
okay.
Yeah.
It'll give us more time to talk about the Right for Rights.
What I'd like you to talk about is some of the individual cases that we're going to be seeing on December 10th, and then I'll give you a big wave when I've got music ready to go, and mm-hmm. Then we'll go from there.
Awesome.
Okay.
Maybe you want to start?
Sure thing, yeah. I'll start with some cases about Canada. Because we do, when we are tabling in the community in Regina and elsewhere, I do get the odd person who says, yeah, well, that's all well and good that we judge all these other countries and tell them that they're not doing their job in terms of human rights, but, like, we're not perfect either, right? So that's a common misconception that Amnesty is just a watchdog for other countries that are, you know, seen to be less righteous than ours, which isn't the case. So this year we actually have three cases about Canada, one of which I'll start with the one that's about the Open for Justice campaign. So that is about the Canadian mining, oil, and gas industry, because its record when it comes to respecting human rights in other countries is pretty horrible. So basically Amnesty wants to campaign for Canada to be held accountable for its actions outside of Canada, because our investment elsewhere, which we definitely profit from financially, has a huge impact on the local populations there. And those same local populations are hugely disadvantaged. Sometimes they lose their land. Sometimes they're killed, depending on the situation. There's one particular case here, a man named Adolfo. He was killed in September 2009. Witnesses said that that was he was murdered by private security guards who were contracted to protect a mining organization in Guatemala, and it's a subsidiary of Hudbay Minerals. So there is a link to Canada in this, but it's so kind of partitioned off that Canada can seem like they're not involved, right? But really, that violence on the grassroots does have a huge impact on local populations. So the action for this particular one is actually directed towards our current Prime Minister, Justin Trudeau, and it's to emphasize that people who are harmed by Canadian companies in other countries have difficulty obtaining justice and they definitely need to have remedy in Canada. Also, it calls for the Prime Minister to make sure that Canada is quote-unquote open for justice. So that's through the creation of an extractive sector ombudsperson, and to ensure that there's access to the Canadian courts for people who have been harmed by Canadian companies in other countries. Just because we leave our country doesn't mean that we can do create horrible harms in other communities, right? We wouldn't accept it here. Mm-hmm. We can't elsewhere.
And we had a Liberal backbenchers bill a few years ago that mm-hmm. almost passed.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah.
Almost passed. And I think it was when we had a minority government, and if enough Liberals had voted for it,
yeah,
at the time, it would have passed.
Oh, okay.
Seems, yeah. So we're hoping for better things from Justin.
Yeah.
I have found the music here now.
And wonderful.
And people are listening. They would have heard a few drum. It started on me, and I wasn't expecting.
Oh, is that right?
It wasn't.
I just hear my own voice, so go ahead.
So, anyway, this is, I'll let Sebastian tell us all about it.
Oh, the artist is called Popa Chubby. He was first, I think he was a punk singer, guitar artist, and now is much more blues rock artist. And it's called Angel on My Shoulder. It's an old song, maybe 10 or 15 years old. I was listening as a teenager, and I saw the guy live, and he's pretty good on stage. So. Yeah, you asked me, Jim, before coming, pick up a song, and just the first one that
awesome.
Ended up in my head. So
okay, all right. So then I'm gonna get it going here right now.
Through the valley, you love? Who do you desire? Am I the one you're thinking of? Can I be an angel? Do I have to die?
We're just talking blues here and mentioning that Johnny Lang is going to be in town. I'm not sure. Soon, anyway, at the casino, I believe.
It's probably worth seeing.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. I saw him. I saw him open for another guy. Buddy Guy.
Oh, wow.
He opened for Buddy Guy. And Buddy Guy was great, but Johnny Lang was fabulous. Absolutely. Okay.
Back to
our topic. whoa, just a second here. Of course, the computer kept on going.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah,
so. So I just wanted to mention, if anyone is interested in having their own write-a-thon at their place, or maybe they can't make it out to ours and want to have one another night, you can just go to writeathon.ca and get all the information we're talking about today. There's tons of resources. There's even a kit that you can get sent to you from the Amnesty office mm-hmm. in Ottawa, just to support you in holding your own event. I mean, all it takes is some postage. And if you were to use the internet, then it mm-hmm. doesn't take much at all, right? So just keep that in mind. And if you are elsewhere in Saskatchewan, go to amnestysaskatchewan.ca, and then you can find out about the events in Moose Jaw and in Saskatoon, and consider putting your own together if you're somewhere else in the province.
That brings up a point. I think it's worth a trip to the Amnesty site.
Mm-hmm.
You know. It's just amazing when you go through there, and all kinds of different countries have issues. You know, if mm-hmm. you're certainly not limited. We were talking about Mexico, but every country, including Canada, has its human rights issues.
Mm-hmm.
And
right now, like, it's in the news with the Syrian refugees
oh, sure.
question.
Like, yeah.
It's mm-hmm. another program that is going to be part of that Right for Our Rights mm-hmm. action is that everybody knows that Justin Trudeau, the new prime minister, promised to resettle 25,000 Syrian refugees by the end of 2016. And it's just been elected, so...
Mm-hmm.
It's time. It's a perfect timing to focus on that.
Yeah, but he's already promise. Backed away from that a little bit.
Yeah.
Just a little.
Yeah. So, people can write about it during the operation, choose a few points to sensibilize Canadian government about that question, ask the authorities to introduce flexible measures for Syrians with family in Canada, make sure that the commitment to resettle refugees does not come at the expense of refugees from other parts of the world. You can ensure that individuals making refugee claims in Canada are not treated differently according to the country they're from, or how they arrive in Canada. Canada should embrace language, policies, practices of those refugees. And it's all over the news and all over the world too, mm-hmm. not only Canada. Like, I'm French, people can obviously hear it. And because of Syrian refugees, issue, like, there is a lot of ugly stuff that are happening in all over Europe, mm-hmm. and France, especially after the Paris attacks,
exactly.
where investigations showed that some terrorists had entered through the immigration wave through Greece in Europe. And after that, like, there is a lot of racism going on towards Syrian refugees. European countries that are built on a dream of open borders are just closing their borders. Mm-hmm. So they're really, really ugly reflex that governments are using. So I'm hoping that Canada will fulfill its promise, or try to fulfill it as much as they can. And it's Justin Trudeau has just been elected with a large majority. It's the first time I witness a Canadian election. So, yeah, it's time to see to face him with his responsibilities as a new prime minister.
Yeah. Well, one of the things that's happening all over the world now that's unfortunate. I think I'm going to call them small C conservative groups who are fear-mongering, basically, mm-hmm. you know, and they're making the direct equation: if you're Muslim, you're terrorist. And mm-hmm. That's one of the problems that we're having now with resettling Syrian immigrants. You've got a number of people that are saying, well, how do you know that they're not terrorists, mm-hmm. you know? And the fact remains that in this country, in Canada, you have a better chance of being killed by a moose.
Especially in Newfoundland. I think they have the most dense population of moose.
There. Northern Ontario, you know, well, we had actually, and all kidding aside, that we had an RCMP officer who was killed when he was responding to a call.
Mm-hmm.
And fortunately, there was a moose in his way, and you can't see them.
Yeah.
They're black. You can't see them. And no chance at all.
And there are so many stereotypes going around this Syrian refugees issue. Like a Muslim, people think Muslim equals terrorist, which is totally, totally wrong. Syrians are not even all Muslims at all. Do we have to remember all those things that those people have been through? That they are victims. Like, they've been caught since 5 years between a Syrian official army that committed a ton of crimes. They're caught in between the army, armed groups, jihadist groups. They've been running away from their home. They've been tortured. They've been slaughtered.
Mm-hmm.
So they have been through a lot of ugly stuff before arriving in Canada. And,
mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm not from around, but I understand that Canada's been built on immigration.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah. And that kind of segues well into another case that we're doing for rights, because the last of the three Canada cases that we're working on is Respect the Rights of Indigenous Peoples. So this is an ongoing discussion. It's been a part of Canada's discussion ever since settlers first came here. But in this particular case, it confronts the fact that Indigenous peoples should not be forcibly removed from their lands or territories. And so there are issues in many regions with seeking to maybe create dams. In this particular case, it's in order to create a dam to generate electricity. And that dam would severely undermine Indigenous peoples' use of the land. It would make fishing unsafe for at least a generation, and it would submerge burial grounds and many other crucial cultural sites. So that's just the third example of a case that we're working on, this Right for Rights. Amnesty has also, last year, for example, Amnesty was working on the case of Stolen Sisters, which it's still working on, but it's mm-hmm. not featured this year. However, that's still a case that's at the forefront of our minds as well.
I think in that instance, with the change of government, the government is saying that they're going to have a hard look at this now, and there is going to be an inquiry, which the previous government was not interested in doing.
Yeah, and if anyone's interested in that issue in particular, Amnesty had a groundbreaking report in 2004 on that issue before it was in the general public's consciousness, and they're still campaigning on it today. So there's definitely some good resources on the amnesty.ca website and some really interesting reports on that issue. One more that I just wanted to highlight is one that, that had happened in Greece. There's a couple in Greece that, were out for a walk in Athens, last year in August, and, Costas is from Greece, I believe, and then his partner is a refugee. They were actually attacked and beaten because they could tell that they were a couple, and also because of his partner's skin color. So it's an interesting case. I just learned about it today, actually, when reviewing this. And I didn't know that between 2014 and 2015, the number of reported attacks against gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender, or intersex people in Greece has more than doubled. So, and at the same time, racist attacks also remain an ongoing issue. This is one of those cases where these people continue to be scared every day that they were out. Costas's partner, he was attacked again at another point since then in March of this year. So that's also a case, writing to the Ministry of Justice, just expressing concern for the LGBTI community and refugees and migrants, people of color in Greece, and also to urge the Greek government to recognize and protect relationships of all gender combinations, because these two people, unfortunately, did not have the follow through to their case that that would be expected. So, yeah.
There's a lot of bad stuff happening in the world.
and worth writing about, for sure.
It is. And, you know, for a lot of people, I think they ask themselves the question, you know, why should I care? And these are people that don't watch the news very much. And sometimes you have to do some digging to find this news, because you know, on your local news media, you're more likely to find a story about puppies than you are to find a story about refugees.
We have nothing against puppies.
No.
But...
I don't know. I suppose they like to have something, you know, they don't want to be all doom and gloom, but sometimes I find that our local news media... they don't take on too many hard issues. And so that, for that reason, you go on the internet, and there are other newspapers, you know, for example, like The Guardian, and they're online as well. And they will talk about the hard issues and things that need to be paid attention to.
Exactly. So, yeah. And also it's, sometimes people don't want to know about these things. They say it's too depressing or, you know, it's too down on humanity, right? Mm-hmm. But I actually find that getting informed on these real issues that I might not known about otherwise makes me feel really like I have a sense of control and that I have a handle on what's actually going on. And I'd rather know rather than not know. I'd rather have a way to take action rather than not. Yep. So it's kind of that balance. But I know, I was just going to say, Seb has a case here about Burkina Faso, and you've actually been there, haven't you?
Yeah, I've been there. Yeah. That links to what Jim said about the media's responsibility. Like in France, we have, we teach that in journalism school. It's called the law of the death compared to the kilometer. I'm using the metric system. But,
okay.
like it's a cliche, but it might be true, saying that one people who died at your street corner right next door will interest you more than 1,000 dead on the other side of the world. And that's the problem of information hierarchy that medias do. Like, they're going to focus on the little things, but that happen next door compared to a huge, great problem that might have happened, but super far away.
Exactly.
And that will be hidden in news, and you will not be aware. And Burkina Faso is an example. So. country in Africa. It's extremely poor. I've been there. And the Amnesty campaign is focusing on the case of girls forced into marriage. And it can be very young girls, under 18, but it can be as young as 11. And of course, at 11, like, you're just a child. Like, you can't resist a social family pressure to marry a man that is sometimes 40, 50, 60 years older than you are. So what Amnesty is advocating is to ask the country, the government, to enforce the law and protect girls and young women from forced marriages and take action, go to the next page. And the timing is, it's like Syrian refugees. It's very, very interesting because Burkina just ended a presidential election with a new president, and a lot of a big part of the international community is watching that country. What's going to happen? What the new president called Roch-Marc Christian Caboret, who was a member of the former majority, and he ended up in the opposition. And it's this election comes right after a popular revolution that ended up the power of Blaise Compaoré, who was in control since 17 years. That was not really a dictatorship, but it was a firm authority with lots of human rights violations. Mm-hmm. And it's now very interesting to watch what the new power is going to do, what's going to be its moves. And even if now the opposition is in power, it doesn't mean that human rights activists should give up. No, it's time to put pressure and see what the new power is going to do.
Exactly. Yeah. I honestly think all of these cases have so much merit to them and are so interesting, moving. I think there's something in them for everyone. I mean, we've mentioned a few today, but there's also one about Albert Woodfox in the United States, who's in solitary after 43 years. He's been in solitary. There's one on behalf of Walid Abu Al-Khair. Again, I apologize for my pronunciation of these names. And he's from Saudi Arabia and is a human rights lawyer. So we're writing on behalf of him. There's also been charges against someone for tweeting. So this is a campaign to drop the charges against Zunar, and that's in Malaysia. So there's a lot of different cases, a very wide breadth of where and what we're writing about. Mm-hmm. I think there's something in it for everyone, and at the very least, come have a glass of wine with us at the Artful Dodger Thursday, December 10th from 5 to 8 p.m. It's a come-and-go event, so feel free to join us. If you're not available on the 10th, join us at Atlantis Coffee House the 8th of December at 7 p.m. because we're there every Tuesday.
And if you can't join the 10th of December, you can still join the organization whenever
exactly.
you want. Subscribe and come write letters every Tuesday and participate to any action the organization is doing.
I'm just going to finish off with this thought that if you are a member of Amnesty, or you don't have to be a member of Amnesty, but if you get involved with letter writing, it gives you some satisfaction that you, instead of looking at the news and feeling helpless about something terrible going on someplace else, this is something that you can do. And it makes a difference, and it's helpful, and it's available to you. And that's it.
Exactly.
We're out of time as we close this week's Human Rights Radio. Thank you, Libby, for being here, and Seb.
Thank you, Jim.
And we hope you've enjoyed listening to and have learned something new about human rights for all people. For information on past and upcoming shows with links to human rights actions and information, go to amnestysaskatchewan.ca. Peter Benenson, founder of Amnesty International, said, "Only when the last prisoner of conscience has been freed, the last torture chamber has been closed, the United Nations Universal Declaration of Human Rights is a reality for the world's people, will our work be done."